The University Symphony Orchestra opens its season on Sunday at 3 o'clock with a concert that is, as always, free and open to the public and will be held in, is it Miller Auditorium?
It is.
Bruce? My guest is conductor Bruce Uchimura, who leads the University Symphony Orchestra. And we are also lucky to be joined by this weekend's soloist, the silver medalist of the Stolberg competition in 2019, Nathan Lee. Thank you for joining us, and nice to see you again.
Nice to be here.
Great. If you don't remember, Nathan is a cellist, and originally you grew up in California.
Yes.
But right now your studies are taking you to the opposite side of the country. Tell me where you're studying and who you study with.
Yeah, so I'm currently part of a dual degree program with New England Conservatory in Harvard. And so I'm studying cello at NEC with Professor Lawrence Lesser.
How are you handling that kind of responsibility? I'm sure every professor wants your very best all the time. How do you handle that?
Yeah, I would say it's just making the most out of the minutes that I devote to my studies. And then also making the most out of the minutes where I'm not studying, like reading or hanging out with friends, doing something fun. Yeah.
You've learned something about how important time management is.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Bruce, this is a program featuring one composer, and he's absolutely, you pointed fingers at me, two composers.
Well, it's Shostakovich and Prokofiev, right?
And Prokofiev, yes, correct. Why was I thinking it was a Shostakovich? So a sort of Soviet era program.
Soviet era, definitely.
Yeah.
Colleagues, if you will, right? Prokofiev and Shostakovich.
Yeah, in a way. Although I think there was a bit of competition.
They knew each other.
Prokofiev spent a lot of time in the Western world and didn't find it as inviting as he'd hoped.
So. I should say colleagues don't necessarily get along, Carol, right?
So.
But they were the two most famous, right, of that era.
That's true. I would like to start with the Prokofiev Sinfonia Concertante. It's his Opus 125. So I'm thinking that's a mature Prokofiev piece.
Yes. Like the last work he did before he died. And did you know that he died the same day as Stalin? So Oistrakh was playing excerpts of his F minor sonata at Prokofiev's funeral, but there were only about 50 people there, sadly. And yes, this was his kind of last work that he did. And Rostropovich was heavily influenced the writing and so forth and so on.
That was my next question: did he have someone in mind as he wrote this?
Yeah.
Mstislav Rostropovich was one of the great cellists of the 20th century, and I think you do see his name on a lot of works of the era because he was so inspiring. Who are some other composers that wrote for Rostropovich?
All of them did. Shostakovich, Kapalevsky, I mean, you name it. Until Rostropovich, of course, moved to the West. Britain, right?
Britain
Benjamin wrote a symphony
Britain.
For a cello. And so Rostropovich was, probably since Pablo Casals, the next great sort of made the cello famous, took the world by storm. And he has a famous story of when he came to make his U.S. debut. I don't know if it was exactly the debut, but he came in and played 10 concertos or something in like 4 days at Carnegie Hall. So he was quite a force.
Didn't he also become a conductor?
He did.
And
sadly. Sadly.
But wasn't he a fine conductor?
No.
Not as good?
No, he was a great musician, but he was not a great conductor. And he was music director of the National Symphony for a while.
Nathan, does Mstislav Rostropovich's presence or recordings or something influence how you approach this piece?
Yes, definitely. Since the piece was written for him, it seems natural to definitely reference his recordings quite heavily while preparing. And I've referred to it many times as I've learned the piece like a few times. I've come back to it multiple times. And each time I hear new things in his interpretation that I'll take on or maybe at least appreciate. So, yeah.
In the Stallberg competition, each finalist performs part of a concerto. Was this the one that you played last spring or last May?
Yes, I played the second and third movements, each of them for a different round. Okay. So second movement was for the semifinals and the last was for the finals.
So how long had you been preparing the piece, would you say?
So that time I had been specifically working on it since, I'd say, the fall before. But I started the piece when I was 15, so I've been learning it off and on since then.
Kara, it's one of the most difficult pieces in the repertoire, if not the most difficult, just demanding. There's a couple of ironies about it. They call it Sinfonia Concertante, which, you know, in the old days, it's like violin and viola or cello, violin, viola, oboe, whatever, you know. And, mm-hmm. But this is definitely cello. there are many prominent solos, a big bassoon solo in the third movement, et cetera, one of the variations, but definitely dominated by cello.
Does that mean in Prokofiev's mind, he titled it Sinfonia Concertante because he did want to feature orchestral soloists along with cello in parts of
that's
the piece?
Speculation.
Okay.
But it's heavily, right? It's a concerto, really.
Yeah.
It's a remake of his first concerto, which is not such a great piece. And not played anymore at all, right, practically, yeah.
Have you learned anything about why he titled it Sinfonia Concertante?
I personally interpreted it as like to be an orchestral symphony with a cello solo on top, but yeah.
Okay.
When you compare it to the Dvorak cello concerto, for example, that is more of a symphony concerto than this piece. This piece is heavily dominated with the cello. And practically, I mean, it's very tuneful. There are lots of things about the orchestra that are very attractive, but they're not very long. You know, tutti's, for example. I mean, Dvorak cello concerto, the cello sits there for 3 minutes while the orchestra plays all the themes, probably better than us. And then the cello finally comes in, you know, so there's speculation on that. I think, if a cellist like Mstislav Rostropovich helped with the composition of the part, you can only imagine what he would have done. You know, more and more showing off the cello and so forth and so on, you know. Although, of course, Rostropovich was a fantastic musician, you know. Use the Shostakovich's first cello concerto, for example. The third movement is a cadenza. So what do you think?
For cello.
And quite a difficult cadenza to make, you know, to learn and to get in your ear and so forth and so on. I'm quite sure Rostropovich was, you know, integral with that because he was Superman. The guy could do anything on the cello, you know, plus compose his own pieces, right?
Bruce Uchimura will conduct the University Symphony Orchestra on Sunday.
And Nathan will play the cello
and
part.
Nathan will take up the cello solo role in this piece, which is Prokofiev's Sinfonia Concertante for Cello and Orchestra, Opus 125, a late work written with the influence of Mstislav Rostropovich. I understand his violin concertos were also written for people he knew, like David Oistrakh as well. And the string writing is quite beautiful. It's not...
You mean for the solo instrument?
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So we can trust Prokofiev, you know, the soloist in his hands. You said you played the second and third movements. I'm wondering which one we should listen to. The third might work because it has a slow and a fast section here. At this point, is there in your mind a journey of music in the Sinfonia? And what does the third movement kind of represent to you, Nathan?
Yeah, I thought the third movement was supposed to be some sort of like comic relief from the first two movements because the first two movements are just relentless. It just keeps going. There are obviously some moments of repose, but I would say as a whole, it's like very like riveting. And the third movement just gives you a chance to step back and just like laugh a little bit at it. I think that's an important component of a lot of Prokofiev's works, is that sort of comic relief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He has personalities that come out in his music. Let's take a break, and we'll hear Israeli cellist Misha Maisky here, the Russian National Orchestra, with Mikhail Pletnyov, conducting the final movement of the Sinfonia Concertante by Sergei Prokofiev. This is the work, the full work, will be performed on Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium by Nathan Lee, the Stolberg Silver Medalist of 2019, and the University Symphony Orchestra led by Bruce Uchimura.
Shocking. It's like
if you just tuned in, we were listening to the final movement of Prokofiev's Sinfonia Concertante, which is a piece for orchestra and cello solo. Bruce Uchimura is here, and soloist Nathan Lee, who is the silver medalist of the Stolberg competition in 2019. As you described it, Nathan, we did hear some serious parts and then that sort of beautiful, ironic Romeo and Juliet sound as well. It sure gives you a chance to, you know, work on many techniques and feel different emotion yourself, I would think, during the piece.
Yeah.
Although you have to concentrate on the notes.
Of course.
It's very difficult.
Playing in tune. Which is a challenge in this piece.
Would you take us again through the structure of the movement that we just heard? It started with an andante.
Theme and variations.
It is theme and variations.
Believe it or not, it's you wouldn't think that by listening to it because it transforms so much, but it's basically theme and variations.
Is that right?
Yes.
So the last part sounded very, very tricky and hard. Is that literally the hardest part? Or because sometimes it's deceptively, there are things that are deceptively difficult that don't sound quite as hard as they really are.
Right. I think this is actually one of those spots where it's like not quite as hard as it seems because you're kind of just like anchored in place for one measure and then you change positions for a different measure. But there's like harder spots in the second movement, for example. There's like a huge cadenza which has like a lot of double stops and abnormal intervals.
Really hard.
Yeah.
Bruce, I should say, if you didn't already know, is a cellist himself and teaches cello at Western Michigan University. So yeah, the sympathy between you is strong. Yeah. This full piece takes about how long to perform?
I think depends on how you play it, but usually 40 minutes.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's a big piece.
It's a real symphony in that sense, too. The concert is Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium, and the concert is free, as always. The public is invited, and there are two composers featured on this concert. We'll be looking next at Shostakovich, who, as we mentioned before, was contemporary, somewhat older, I think, than Prokofiev. Or maybe pretty close, I'm not sure.
No, Prokofiev was born 1891, Shostakovich 1901. So
why do I think of Shostakovich as sort of the elder statesman?
Because he didn't really leave Russia. Remember, Prokofiev spent a great deal of time outside of Russia for a period of his life.
He put in more years in the Soviet Union than did Prokofiev.
And then finally Prokofiev came back, you know, which then they were both chastised for being anti-Soviet and so forth and so on. So
too many corrupting Western influences in their music.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who was studying the scores and finding all of this subversive
material. He was Stalin's chief of thought. How do you like that? Chief of thought. Think about that.
Amazing.
Think about that. Andrei Zdanov.
So
that was the 1948 when he condemned both Shostakovich and Prokofiev for some of their music. So
when we talk about the Symphony No. 5, we do tend to bring in this context because Shostakovich was in a very dramatic part of his life, his entire career, and easily his life itself was at stake. Having been warned and chastised by the authorities that he needed to sort of repent and make up for his opera, Lady Macbeth of Matensk. So he wrote a symphony.
He did. He also, at the time, he wrote the Fourth Symphony, which is not played, and it was highly experimental. And he quickly retracted that and worked on the Fifth because he thought, this is going to go nowhere if they didn't like the opera. And by the way, that ended his opera writing, which isn't it that tragic with a genius like that? I should say, you know, we're going to play the Festival Overture. It has something to do with that. The Festival Overture, Shostakovich apparently was like Mozart. So whatever was up in his mind, he wrote. And there's a famous story, and a colleague was a witness to that. His colleague was there with him, and he was asked to write this festive overture for something, you know, and the guy took his pen, sat down, and wrote it all out. And that was it. And it's one of his most popular works, right, because it's short, and it's easy, and joyful, and tuneful, and it's very easy to transcribe for band, and so forth and so on, you know, so... But that's how prodigious this guy was, you know.
Shostakovich also appeals to young people. There's
of course.
Yeah. Can you think, what are some of the qualities that...
Well, I want Nathan to chime in with that. But there's sort of this angst, right, that is present in his music. For example, we have a quartet at school, and they go, oh, we're all excited. We're going to work on Shostakovich's Eighth String Quartet, which young people love. Because, first of all, it's playable. It's accessible, and it has this, well, I wouldn't call it bipolar, but, you know, extreme emotion.
Obsessive.
Yeah. Starts very, very sad, and has all these themes, right? Cello concerto, piano trio, so forth and so on, that are representative, right? Shostakovich definitely had codes, right? You can call them motives.
Do-do-do-do.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Di-da-dum, which is the Eighth Quartet begins with, and so the kids just love it, you know? And the bombastic sections are really bombastic. And so for four string players to come in and just be able to, like, hack away their instruments, and usually in lessons, like, why do you sound like that? Don't make that kind of sound. Play with a beautiful sound, you know. And Shostakovich is not supposed to be beautiful sometimes, you know.
Can you add to that, Nathan?
Yeah. I a lot of the things that Maestro said are true. I would just add that, like, I don't know, I think... When Shostakovich is talked about in like the classical music circles nowadays, I feel like a lot of young people appeal to they like the rhythmic aspects. Like, it's very riveting. It's very has a lot of drive, and I think people can identify with that. And then also the slower parts are extremely profound, and I think that's. That dichotomy is sort of what draws people to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's something kind of rock and roll about Shostakovich,
right,
in parts, truly.
For sure. Yet it's traditional, you know what I mean? Like, it is, you know, he uses all the traditional names, concerto, symphony, string quartet.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
He didn't get into tone poems.
No, and it's written in a very accessible way. I mean, the music is difficult, you know, rhythmically and so forth and so on, but it's written out, you know. Towards the end, he got a little wacko, but you know what I mean? It's not like some modern music, which is inaccessible to the young person, at least the interpretation of it, you know, to an extent. After they have some experience with it, then that's different, you know.
In the Fifth Symphony, you also go on a musical journey, and he walks the line of popularity and hinting at the rot at the center of the Soviet Union very carefully and very well. What are some of the ways he does this?
The outer movements are sort of the heroic ones, although if you play the first movement is the typical stark contrast, emotional contrasts that Shostakovich likes to use. So the opening is very interesting because it begins very aggressively, and within three bars, he's back to the most sublime, sad thing, or not back to, introduces the most sad and, you know, the theme that he uses to develop in the whole symphony with a single violin line and the low strings, and it goes on quite a long time before it kind of warms up to the old, the tanks are coming, you know, the kind of feeling. The second movement, Scherzo, sounds like a scherzo, but there's a lot of Shostakovich sarcasm in there. Like, he throws in 4/4 bars in a 3/4 time piece. That's very unsettling, although it's so subtle, I don't think the listener even realizes. It's just like, oh, that's interesting, you know. Kind of repetitive, I think, on purpose, and with different characters, but not, you know, everything very simply put, like the theme, you know, you hear it, and that's the theme, and you remember it, you know. The third movement is the most emotional. That's the one that people sit, and if you have, you know, certain memories of things like that, that's where all the crying and the angst takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the last movement, which is also another joke, because on an exterior of this sort of, you know, wow, great, you know, uplifting music, the string players play for bars and bars and bars in the coda, a single A, eighth notes. I mean, that's got to be a joke. You have to be kidding me. You know, when you open a part and you see one note for 55 bars or something like that, you got to be kidding me. While the brass are blasting away, you know, so there's definitely Shostakovich. You know what they said about this piece? This is a Soviet artist's response to just criticism. So you remember before this, for his opera, like you said, he was chastised and thrown aside. And so this was his redemption, apparently, because the public and the committee liked it, so.
It was a masterful move, but not where he personally wanted to go necessarily.
Probably, but we won't know that, right? Sometimes when those things happen and you find ways in which to circumvent it but still be creative, maybe that's what his music is all about, you know? We don't know that. You know, we don't know that the Fourth Symphony would have been the way he turned out. He was quite young at the time, you know, so I don't. That's a very good question.
There's also a story that goes along with its first performance. It had a stunning effect. People were deeply moved, as you said, partly because of it was wartime, and so it in one night he resurrected his reputation.
Yeah, but then he went off again. You realize that, right? 1948 came, and they said, ah. This is not good music. Babi Yar, I think that symphony, you know, I'm not sure what the number is. They said, this is terrible.
Once again, he was worried about ending up in Siberia all of a sudden. Well, we'll listen to, we fought over this, the Allegretto or the opening, and you may be right, but I still want to hear this opening. So that we get Shostakovich's mood at the very top of the piece, we will hear at least a section of the opening of the Symphony No. 5 and the full piece on the program Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium with the Western Michigan University Symphony Orchestra, led by Bruce Uchimura. These slow melodies wind in and out of the first movement of Mr. Dmitri Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony. So it is a slow build.
It's a slow build.
We're going to hear something completely different next on WMUK, the piece with which you're starting the program.
Right.
But I just want to thank you, Bruce, and Nathan Lee for being here on WMUK. Bruce, what are your final thoughts on the program on Sunday? Anything else you can mention about the music or the players? This will be the first concert of the season with the symphony, which, as always, you see fresh faces every year.
I do. I have a lot of fresh faces. So it's in that way, it's a little unpredictable. So because whenever I have a whole bunch of new, particularly freshmen, it's I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I mean, I think I know what's going to happen, but you know, music is live in that way, and you know, we do it now, and then we do it 2 minutes later, and it's different. So we shall see.
There's so much responsibility to learn your part in an orchestral setting. It will sound bad if it's not prepared.
But I have good hopes. They've worked very hard. And so I think they're all looking forward to the concert. So we'll see what happens.
Nathan, I think it was during the music, I said you must really look forward to opportunities when this concerto by Prokofiev, you're playing with the full sound and orchestra rather than piano accompaniment on this.
Yeah, it's just a whole different experience when you're playing it with orchestra, because you get all the different like tonal qualities of the different instruments, whereas when you play it with piano, it can be exciting, but you don't get quite the same kind of variation or depth that you do with an orchestra.
After this weekend, what are some of the next high points in your year, end of 2019 into 2020?
Yeah, I'll be applying to several competitions. Much like the Stolberg, and I hope that I'll be able to do well in those, and definitely the Stolberg has prepared me for those kinds of experiences.
That's right. You were a finalist how many times?
So I was a semi-finalist first, and then I was a finalist, and then last year I was second.
You remember Nathan played the Elgar Concerto with us at this time last year, right?
Yes, stepping in for the different soloist, and that was wonderful. Right, right. Well, this time it's Prokofiev, and I hope you have a terrific concert on Sunday.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bruce.
We will. Thank you.
The Festive Overture is
the other side of Shostakovich, we'll say.
Pop Shostakovich. Love this piece. It is just very fun to play and fun to hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.